Hello, this is Beatrice Pavia with the News Gazette of Saturday, Sunday, and Monday, February 10th, 11th, and 12th, 2018. We'll begin with the story on the front page of today's paper, Monday. It is headlined, Courts Are Busy After Bond Law Changes. New Offender Category Gets Second Look, Hearing, and Daily Credit. It's Dateline Urbana. As of January 1st, there's added activity in the normally busy daily arraignment court hearings in Champaign County. Thanks to the Bail Reform Act of 2017, signed into law in June, people arrested for certain low-level crimes who can't post bond right away get a second-look bail hearing. The idea is to prevent people charged with nonviolent Class A, B, and C misdemeanors and some Class 3 and 4 felonies from being locked up too long because they can't afford to post bond. Champaign County Presiding Judge Tom DeFantis said, Bail reform is legislation designed for Cook County, and the rest of us have to just say, okay, okay. A Chicago Tribune story published in June when the law was signed by Governor Bruce Rauner said the legislation reflected a general consensus among criminal justice advocates, Cook County Sheriff Tom Dart, and Cook County State's Attorney Kim Fox, that the state's cash bail system is unfair to poor people. For example, the story cited 2015 numbers from Dart that showed more than 1,000 inmates in his jail had served more time in custody than they were ultimately sentenced to because of their inability to post bail. DeFantis noted that laws sometimes get passed affecting the whole state to serve the interests of Cook County. He said, It fixes problems that we don't have, noting that the Urbana jail population recently has been as low as 130. We have a capacity of over 300. For instance, the law calls for a lawyer to be present for defendants at bail hearings. That has been the practice for several decades in Champaign County, but apparently not in some Illinois counties. Even if a person wants time to hire his own attorney, a public defender will be temporarily appointed to argue bond for him. DeFantis contends, and jail administrator Captain Carrie Voges agrees, that Champaign County judges usually set reasonable bonds from the get-go so that defendants without means can be released soon after arrest. Judges are painfully aware that Sheriff Dan Walsh does not want taxpayers incurring the expense and potential liability of housing a shoplifter alongside an accused murderer. Bonds range from recognizance, that is, just signing a promise to return to court, to a dollar figure. Defendants pay 10% of the monetary bond set for the privilege of being free until their case can be resolved. Judge John Kennedy is assigned to arraignment court, where arrestees have their first contact with the judge, typically within 24 hours of arrest. Kennedy listens to a prosecutor's brief synopsis of what the person is accused of, his or her criminal background, and his or her history of showing up for court. He then hears from the defense attorney about the person's ability to pay and ties to the community. Based on that combination of facts, the judge sets a figure that he believes is enough to guarantee the person will return to court for future hearings. While the law dictates a second hearing within 7 calendar days, Kennedy sets them for the next day, with the exception of Mondays, which are typically heavy arraignment days after the weekend. Kennedy said, The point of this is supposed to be, number one, that they can bring to the court's attention information they may not have had at the first court appearance. And secondly, the attorney can point out that a defendant has not posted bail. That is something the court is supposed to consider. The law created two categories of offenses. Category A includes murder, Class X, 1 and 2 felonies, as well as violent misdemeanors. Category B encompasses business, petty offenses, misdemeanors, and Class 3 and 4 felonies that are not violent. It's the Category B offenders getting the second look hearings. Those who still cannot make bond after a judge's review have an added chance of release. The law provides that they receive credit of $30 per day served against their total bail, not the 10% required for release. Voges said that when the law took effect, there was no help from the state in setting up a mechanism to track those cases. She said, "It was chaotic because there is no computer program to manage this. We had to make up our own way," adding that she personally updates those figures daily with an Excel spreadsheet. But she is not complaining because the number of Category B offenders unable to post bond has been fairly low. Since the first of the year, only 9 people have been released due to the $30 daily credit on their bond, and the person who sat in jail the longest endured only 4 days. She said, "It has not been that bad, nothing compared to some of the counties I've talked to. Sangamon was tracking more than 40. The reason it hasn't been higher in Champaign County," she said, "is that local police usually use great discretion in deciding whether to arrest a Category B offender or just give that person a notice to appear in court at a later date." She said, "Then you have judges that use common sense to decide to let these people out in the first place on recognizance." The next story we're going to read is from the front page of Sunday's paper, and it is headlined, "Home Alone, Families Plea to Unit 4, It Is Time to Relieve the Stress." It is datelined Champaign. When Deb and Tim Bowers bought their West Church Street home in April 2006, they were convinced it was where they would grow old together. They pictured their 3 children being raised inside the large brick house among the warm wood interior that they had fallen in love with. They were delighted they could have spaces of their own as well, a scrapbooking room for Deb and space for Tim's woodworking hobby. They sank money into the $230,000 home beyond the mortgage, Deb putting nearly all of her inheritance from her father into improvements, and Tim adding built-in bookcases in the den. And then, in November 2016, Unit 4's $183.4 million referendum passed, which would transform their neighborhood. After 2 failed attempts to score taxpayer approval for a project that would have relocated Central High School to 80 acres of farmland along Interstate Drive, a new school board was voted in, and they reworked the plan. Keeping Central Central was the mission, and voters, including Deb and Tim Bowers, agreed. As the district went to work buying what it deemed to be necessary properties for the $87.1 million expansion of Central's campus, the family watched. Their neighbors at 615 and 619 West Church sold their properties to the district, but the Bowers property was not in the district's critical path, and so Unit 4 moved on. Initially, the Bowers decided to leave things alone, too. They planned to stay, even as construction would continue around them. "We love our home," Deb said. "We cannot really replace this." But Unit 4's purchases on either side of them, she said, made them feel encroached upon, and they wondered if staying was a good idea after all. They worried about dust from the demolition of the units surrounding them, irritating their son's asthma. They wondered if their younger daughter would still be able to play in the driveway alongside their home. Preliminary images created by architects and released by the district in recent weeks show that if the Bowers choose to stay, their house could end up as the last single-family unit on that side of the block. Now, Deb Bower says her family is in a state of limbo, unsure of anything, and incapable of planning their next move. Until they learn definitely whether the district wants to buy their home, and if so, at what selling price, that state of limbo is where they say they will remain. After multiple attempts to communicate with the board outside of meetings, Deb and Tim Bowers sought legal help. They turned to Paul Cole, an attorney with Champaign's Irwin Martinkus and Cole, and described the family situation. who described this family situation as one of unexpected detriment. Cole said, "The entire project of developing Central the way it's being done is a great thing, and there are times when a project like that generates unexpected detriment to some people. You cannot have a lot of progress without somebody being inconvenienced." Through Cole, the Bowers wrote to Unit 4 board members on December 26, their most recent communication, detailing the list of possible inconveniences to them. They wrote, "We are writing again because we see movement on plans to redevelop properties in our neighborhood, but no indication of how that development will affect us. First, and in brief, is our home going to be damaged by adjacent construction issues? Will we and our children, one of whom is asthmatic, be subjected to dust or lead dust or asbestos?" Unit 4 Board President Chris Kleppel said the Bowers aren't the first ones to consider the safety of the district's construction sites. Unit 4 also acknowledged its responsibility by hiring O'Shea Builders to ensure construction is completed to standard, he said. Kleppel said, "The district will be good stewards of the project. That is why we have hired a construction manager. We're going to follow construction standards anybody building anywhere would have to follow." The home next door at 615 West Church is slated for a fall demolition, with the one at 619 West Church likely following. In their letter, the Bowers went on to write, "If our residential environment is going to be severely compromised, then we would hope the district will help us toward finding an equivalent home. But the standards that define an equivalent home differ depending on who is setting them." Earlier last year, before the Bowers saw images of what their block might look like, the district sent a local appraiser to evaluate their home. When they learned the results, Deb said she and her husband were stunned. "They appraised our house for the same amount of money that we paid for it 11 years ago," she said, effectively saying, "We made no improvements over 11 years." When contacted by the News Gazette, the appraiser, Urbana-based Jim Webster, said client confidentiality prevented him from going into the details. He said, "There is not an official standard. You try to identify the feature characteristics and try to understand the neighborhood and the quality of the house, such as the size, the quality of construction, the condition of the property, the condition of the improvements, ideally trying to identify the property as a whole and relate that to market value." But with the Bowers' house projected to be the last single-family residence in the block on their side of church and adjacent to the driveway of a busy high school parking lot, Cole said it's unlikely that it will attract many buyers, making the term market value almost a misnomer. So he said, "When we talk price, and when we talk buying and selling, we are not really talking about buying and selling as if this were a market-driven event where you have a willing buyer and a willing seller. There is no free market here." Cole said that is why he proposed an option, a contract that would give the district the right, but not the obligation, to buy the Bowers' home and at the same time give the family the right to sell at a set price on or before a mutually agreed upon date. Cole said, "That was my creative approach to say, hey, I have an idea. Don't buy the house. We don't make any demand that you do. Just promise us that when you do want to buy the house, you will pay a certain price." Pat Fitzgerald, the school board's real estate representative, said an option has not been agreed to because of the price point. The Bowerses, though, through Cole, have proposed selling their property to the district for around $300,000. The price is meant to account for the renovations the Bowers have made and the trouble of moving a family of five into a new home. Fitzgerald said, "We cannot justify to the taxpayers that purchase. How can we, with a straight face, go to the taxpayers and ask them to pay this? The challenge in this is finding a dollar value that they find appropriate for their home and contrast it to a dollar value that the school board can justify to the taxpayers." To determine what the district is willing to pay for a property like the Bowers's, Cole turned to the units beside them. He looked at the assessed value of both 615 and 619 West Church, that is, what the county determined their tax value to be, and compared that to what the district paid for each. For 615 West Church, purchased for $240,000, Cole said the district paid a price nearly 80% higher than its assessed value. And for 619 West Church, in the $210,000 range, the district paid nearly 314% higher than assessed value, Cole said. He was trying to understand the logic behind the pricing, he said, but noted that neither of those percentage figures could reasonably be applied to the Bowers home. If that were the logic, he said, then you would look at what the county thought the Bowers house was worth. Well, if you took 80% more of that, as was done on their neighbor's property, then you would be looking at a value for the Bowers' house at $360,000. If, on the other hand, you looked at county value on the west of us at 619 and took 314% times that, you would get a house that's worth about $630,000 for the Bowers property. And Cole acknowledged that that $630,000 asking price was far too high. No one on the Bowers side of the discussion is making these kind of demands, Cole said. We're just looking for some way to approach this uniformly to say, treat us the same way as you treated everybody else. Fitzgerald said that focusing on price per square foot is favorable to the Bowers, but not necessarily to the taxpayer. He said that they have a nice house is not in dispute. Nobody is debating that fact, but we are restrained by what is fiscally prudent. The Bowers said they cannot see an immediate resolution in front of them, adding that they have not heard from the board since before Christmas. Because of the nature of the issue, Illinois law allow school boards the right to keep real estate transactions and the discussions surrounding them private until finalized. Cole said, the district's intent, it never has been, and I'm sure it never will be, to do any kind of harm to a particular family or property. It's just that the Bowers are experiencing a great deal of stress, and it is just time to relieve the stress. The next story we're reading is also from Sunday's front page. It is the Sunday special on Willard Airport, headlined Airport Security, Officials Feeling Good About Adding United After 12% Increase in Ridership. It's Dateline Savoy. When Willard Airport added United flights to Chicago last June, officials hoped that they would not take away passengers from American, and so far they haven't. American Airlines' load factor, which is roughly the percentage of seats filled on each flight from Willard, increased from 80.2% in 2016 to 81.5% last year. That is good news because it means United did not take away from American's performance, said Gene Cossey, the airport's executive director. United is capturing lost passengers or recovering leakage. It's mostly those people who otherwise had been driving somewhere else. American did have about 3,500 fewer departing passengers in 2017, but Cossey said that was mostly due to it dropping a couple of flights for a few months as it was having issues juggling planes and pilots. Between June, when United Airlines began service at Willard, through the end of 2017, it carried 16,896 passengers out of the University of Illinois-owned airport. That drove the 12% increase in departing passengers at Willard last year and pushed it over the $100,000 mark for the first time since 2007. United's flights haven't been as full as American's, with load factors trending around 52%, Cossey said, and a peak in October at 75%. He said it varied a bit, which is expected for a recently added airline. Officials say the growth is the result of the Intergovernmental Task Force from around 2014 that sought to revitalize the airport. Mike DiLorenzo, a senior associate chancellor at the U of I, said, One of the big aspects of that was to bring more air service into the community. I don't think we've done that, but I think we have been successful. In the past year, United added 3 daily flights to Chicago, and American added a second flight to Dallas-Fort Worth International Airport, and maintained its 6 daily flights to O'Hare throughout the winter. Lori Gold Patterson, who owns Pixo in Urbana, appreciates the new options and has been flying out of Willard more often. She said, "For the last year and a half, most of my flights have been out of Champaign. They were never out of Champaign before, usually O'Hare and Bloomington. Last weekend, though, she was looking for flights to Atlanta and ended up choosing to fly there directly from Bloomington Normal Central Illinois Regional Airport. I just couldn't justify the difference," she said. "I think it was $100 more leaving out of Champaign, and then I would have to have had a layover in Chicago." With United and American competing on flights to Chicago, prices should come down. Cossey said he has not received any reports yet from the airlines about average ticket prices, but said anecdotally he is seeing lower prices when he's looked for tickets. When Bloomington's airport picked up Patterson as a passenger, while Bloomington's airport picked up Patterson as a passenger, overall, it saw a decrease in departing passengers in 2017, according to Deputy Marketing Director Fran Striebing. She said, "We were down last year 12.4%, attributing that to some decreased capacity on Delta flights and other factors. There have been some changes in our market," she said. While Bloomington's airport has free parking, Patterson said the $5 a day at Willard has not been a problem and was not a factor in her recent ticket purchase. "I usually have somebody drop me off at Willard," she said. The Willard Task Force Market Research said the Savoy Airport was not losing too many passengers to Bloomington and that the parking fee was not a significant deterrent. For Willard to add free parking, Cossey said, it would need to become an airport authority with taxing powers like Bloomington has. At other Central Illinois airports, everybody in the community pays for parking because it's part of their taxes, Cossey said. At Willard, only people who park pay for parking, which provides an important revenue stream. For 2018, Cossey hopes ridership continues to increase and to add more flights and destinations, but he said the industry is facing a shortage of pilots, which could make that difficult. "There is a general pilot shortage," he said, as Congress recently raised the hours of experience needed to become an airline pilot. Pilots are also required to retire at age 65. Cossey said, "We now have more airplanes than crews to fly them." But he thinks there is still unmet demand at Willard, especially with potential leisure travel. He said, "The majority of our traffic is business travel, either university business or business related to the university or businesses that are based here. There is some leisure travel, but that is where most of our leakage is, either to Chicago or Indianapolis." Here is a local story. An area update headlined, "Edison Teacher Awarded Group's Golden Beet, B-E-E-T, Dateline Champaign." A local middle school teacher won a Golden Beet Award for her project introducing students to sustainable farming. The Illinois Stewardship Alliance is giving 1 of 5 Golden Beet Awards to Edison Middle School teacher Julie Anders and the Fowler Farm Project. The awards are given to organizations that promote locally grown food. The Fowler Farm Project is a garden site where students from Edison and Urbana High School learn about agriculture, whether by studying invasive species, gathering eggs from chickens, or studying how farmers use drones. Anders said, "It gives insight about what it takes to bring food to the table. The digital world is stressing our students and all of us in ways that we have yet to fully understand. Getting out into the green spaces, digging, planting, learning about the chickens, respecting them and providing appropriate environments for them, gathering eggs, feeling the weather and its effects rather than just checking it out on a phone app is useful in an entirely different way than reading about it. Here is a court sentencing story. It is headlined, "Indecency Plea Lands Man in Jail." Dateline Urbana. A Champaign man who admitted he exposed himself at a fast food restaurant where two young girls were sitting last spring has been sentenced to 312 days in jail. Johnny Gillen, age 42, whose last known address was in the 700 block of Bethune Court, pleaded guilty Friday before Judge Heidi Ladd to a single count of misdemeanor public indecency, admitting that he exposed his genitals in a fast food restaurant in the 1800 block of West Bradley Avenue in Champaign on April 4th. In exchange, felony charges of indecent solicitation of a child were dismissed. At the time of his arrest, police said two girls, aged 12 and 16, were seated in the restaurant when a seemingly intoxicated Gillen approached and asked them to perform sex acts with him. When they declined his repeated propositions, he exposed himself. Assistant State's Attorney Tim Sullivan, who was covering the plea for Matt Bannock, said Bannock recently learned that the 16-year-old said she had not been directly solicited by Gillen, but was repeating to police what Gillen allegedly said to the younger girl. And Sullivan said the younger girl had recently moved to Georgia and was not interested in returning to participate in a trial. Sullivan said Gillen had several prior convictions for battery, aggravated battery, theft, criminal damage to property, and possession of a controlled substance. We are going to take a short break now, and we will return with the second half hour of the News Gazette. Please stay tuned.